This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Mak, Kusu Chuang and Wong Shaning. It is 7.05 in the morning, Thursday the 15th of August. And overnight, US stocks suffered one of the deepest sell-offs of the year and treasuries surged as mounting signs of a global economic slowdown stoked fears of a possible recession.
So the S&P, Dow Jones and Nasdaq sank almost 3%. The Dow plunged 800 points, the worst rot of the year. Of course, this was all sparked, Wong Shaoning, when the 10-year Treasury rate slid below the 2-year mark for the first time since 2007. So that's, you know, obviously all the warning signs are flashing for disaster that lies ahead.
Well, yes, for the first time, the 30-year yield fell to the lowest on the record, and financial shares also followed suit. It was down 3.5%, Bank of America down 4.7%, Goldman and JP also fell more than 4%, and Morgan Stanley fell 3.3%. In fact, all 30 Dow components retreated. It's like finally the equity market woke up and realized that, hey, things aren't so good, which is something the bond market has been signaling for quite a long time.
Everything really is not awesome.
Certainly is not. And volatility has indeed gripped the markets since President Donald Trump rekindled the trade war at the start of August. Oil sank, gold rallied, and the dollar also rose. So for more on global markets this morning, we speak to Vishnu Varathan, Head of Economics and Strategy, Oceania and Treasury Department at Mizuho Bank. Good morning, Vishnu. Now, markets fell as the 10-year Treasury rate slid below the 2-year for the first time since 2007. The US yield curve has often been seen as a predictor of recession. What do bond investors know that equity investors don't?
I think, to be fair, that two different groups watch very different things. So one could imagine that, you know, earlier the bond markets were just going to bet on whether or not the Fed was going to cut. At the extreme, they also bet on how much supply there will be of US Treasuries, so on and so forth. So as the economic situation got worse, I think bond markets have had their eye on only one ball, where interest rates will go. And if the economic situation further out looks a bit soggier and harder to recover, then the 10-year get pushed down even faster. Whereas I think equities for a while were betting on the fact that if the Fed cuts and they pump in enough money into the economy, that will be enough to boost their prices for a while. Of course, that illusion fades very quickly when you realize that it's a synchronized downturn like the one that we saw with the data coming out from Germany, China and all over.
Yeah, so Vishnu, from a policy perspective, right, what can central banks do? Should even central banks get involved? And if they do, should they stop dropping rates again?
I think that's actually a very, very deep argument there. And it's not clear how much central banks can do given the starting point this time around. So this is a very different starting point to 2008 when the GFC hit. So there are arguments for and against. But one thing to bear in mind is market expectations as well. So markets expect central banks to take further and very bold actions, in the absence of which I think the financial markets could sell off in a big way. And the frightening thing for us is that in a lot of cases, many recessions were triggered initially by a financial market sell-off. So I think two things about the monetary policy right now is, knowing full well there's less room with interest rates, I think central banks will need to do more on unconventional measures, whether or not it will yield proper results, at least for expectations purposes.
And Vishnu, if you look at China, right, they posted the weakest industrial output growth since 2002, and we've also seen slumping retail sales. So there is weakness in both demand and supply numbers. Will this add more pressure for China to compromise in the US-China trade negotiations?
I think that's always going to be a tempting argument to make. You know, it's like saying, I'm not beautiful on the outside. Oh, God, I'm not beautiful on the inside. I feel lousy about myself. Should I compromise in finding my partner? Probably not. And I think the white paper that China put out on the terms in which they're going to engage, I think that's going to be very important for them, because if there's one thing that the politics around it requires, it's that China maintains its stance so that within China, the government doesn't receive flak or is not subject to flak. And for that purpose, I think China also wants to make sure that they maintain competitive advantage in key industries, and so they do not want to concede too much ground either.
Now, Vishnu, you have described Singapore's 2019 growth forecast downgrade from a target range of 1.5 to 2.5% to 0.0 to 1% as brutal but realistic. Is there no possibility of a sharp rebound in the second half of the year, especially from manufacturing?
if I was a statistician, then I would tell you that, you know, in terms of probability, there is a probability of that. But that's going to be a very, very slim probability because of two things. One is for the exact reason that you pointed out. You know, Trump has once again upped the uncertainty. If we are along this path that we're trundling along, we're going to see a tariff step up in phases, one in September, then 15th December. The uncertainty during this period is going to make manufacturing, put manufacturing under cosh again. And the other thing is, we're also going into the Halloween Brexit situation. So uncertainty continues to be a very, very big holdback factor. And so the question is, for manufacturing to rebound, it need to rebound at double-digit levels to see Singapore printing somewhere close to the 2.5% growth. And it's very difficult to envisage that, particularly as we're seeing even signs of a little bit of a double dip downturn in tech as well.
Yeah, Vishnu, I've got a two-part question for you. And the first part refers back to your original comments on Fed policy, or in fact, central bank policy, unconventional measures you mentioned. I don't know what you mean by unconventional measures. The second part of the question is this Friday's GDP print from Malaysia. The street is expecting the range of 4.7 to 4.8%. It's a very narrow range. That's higher than 4.5% in the first quarter. What's your expectation? So, two-part question.
I'll take the first part first. So, unconventional meaning, we think, you know, interest rates can be cut for the Fed, but for many other central banks, interest rate cuts are very limited. So, we're going to go down the familiar unconventional in the sense of maybe more asset purchases, more QE-type programs. But they are also pushing the unconventional boundaries in terms of what asset classes they may buy. ECB ran into a problem of having not enough high quality assets to buy. So clearly they need to push boundaries. The BOJ set some of that standards in terms of ETF purchases, so on and so forth. I think all of this remain contentious. I'm not debating that. But however, they need to be seen doing something. So that's unconventional. On Malaysia, yes, we do expect GDP to step up a bit, slightly, partly because of base effects, partly because of some of the downtime in the ONG sector coming back on stream. But really, the backward-looking Q2 data is not something to take consolation from. It's the forward-looking risks that remain, I think, very high on the radar. So we can expect one print, but I think the risks that we keep in mind are quite different.
Thank you so much, Vishnu. And that was Vishnu Varathan, Head of Economics and Strategy, Oceania and Treasury Department at Mizuho Bank, expecting Malaysia's Q2 GDP to improve slightly, but cautioning that looking at these backward-looking numbers is not necessarily the be-all and end-all. We have to keep other risks in mind as well.
Yeah, not the bee's knees, as they say in the UK. But he's right in pointing out that it's what lies ahead, which should be more interesting for the markets, right? And what lies ahead is not necessarily good in terms of growth.
I think pretty much we can see the second Q numbers will probably be better, definitely, than first Q.
Because of the high base, yeah.
So first Q is 4.5. Street is expecting 4.7 to 4.8 for second Q. But like he said, that's a lagging indicator, yeah. Right? What's more worrying is the numbers looking forward. And if we look at some of the GDP in our region, which are more sensitive to especially external trade, you know, the future is not that bright, actually.
I mean, yeah, a very good predictor of future behavior is where the equity markets are pointing. And equity markets, obviously, they just had a huge trough last night. Bond markets have been sending these signals for weeks now. And last night, as you say, Wong Xiaoning, the equity markets finally woke up.
And yesterday, actually, it's quite startling because the 10-year Treasury yield dipped as much as 1.9 basis points below the 2-year yield. And this is widely considered an indicator of a U.S. economic recession to begin within the next 18 months. And that expectation was also bolstered by weak Chinese and German economic data. And it's been fueled as well by worsening U.S.-China trade relations. So it's really not that positive on the global growth front.
No, it's like a confluence of factors, right? So you've had very weak economic data coming out, not just from Europe, which is, I think, really going into a recession. It's having subpar growth, right? And most of the negative yield bonds are actually in the Eurozone and, of course, Japan. And then you've had also China showing a really slowdown in not only just demand, but also supply parts of the economy. So you're looking at the world and you think, where's the growth coming from? And I think US wakes up and realize we can't do this alone. You know, we probably are going into this very deep period or this period of quite significant slowdown.
Yeah, so what happened last night was the yield on the 10-year note in the US, right, dropped 1.9 basis points below the 2-year yield, right? So that was unusual, first time since 2007. And usually the yields for the longer duration notes are higher because,
yes,
you know, you put your money away for the long time. But what does that mean for markets? Because the Dow responded by dropping over 3%. That's a lot, most since, I don't know, months.
But the question is, you know, what are investors doing? Because when I just listen to all the podcasts and the news on the radio and even looking at some of the papers, the sense is that equity investors still hope that that's going to be a good year for them because they're all chasing returns, right? So if you look at the fixed income market and you think there's negative yield, where am I going to put my money? So that's why you see these sharp swings up and down in equity markets because everybody's chasing the short-term gain.
Can they chase gold? Because gold is up 18.5% so far this year. I also checked out Bitcoin, strangely enough, and that's above $10,000 per coin now.
But it doesn't have the same amount of liquidity, and some funds don't have mandates to buy gold. So if you're a traditional long fund, old-fashioned long fund, your asset classes are usually fixed to fixed income and equity. So you'll be going in and out of these two asset classes trying to chase lock-in gains.
So my question here, right, is on Donald Trump, because he did tweet following the so-called inversion, and he called to call a Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell clueless, and he's placed the blame for this, in quotes, crazy inverted yield curve squarely on the Fed, which he believes raised interest rates too quickly. Is there some basis to this accusation?
No.
Firstly, it is not practice of an American president to comment on Fed behavior.
Because it's supposed to be independent.
Yeah, they are supposed to be looking after the monetary policy of the economy, stand independently and take a long-term view of things. You don't react to just sharp swings in equity markets. That's not how central banks behave. That's not the way it should be. And you as a president shouldn't interfere. It's not good practice, I guess, or governance in a way.
Yeah, that's just one centerpiece of the Trump administration, isn't it?
Yeah, I think as we've seen so far, Trump has shown a remarkable disregard for convention, I think we shall call it. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.